Welcome to Safe and Sound, New Zealand's only Animal Rights radio show, broadcasting from Free FM in the Waikato and also from Wellington Access Radio, Coast Access Radio, Access Manawatū, Arrow FM, Plains FM, Radio Southland and Planet FM in Auckland. My name's Sandra Kyle and it's my pleasure to bring you an interview I recorded recently with Andrew Kirshner, the new CEO of 600 Million Dogs Need You. All will be revealed about that intriguing name shortly. I began by asking Andrew what motivated him to work for animal rights. You've said that you see in your own eyes the eyes of every animal. Is this what started you on your animal rights journey?
I was fortunate to grow up with a dog that my parents brought home at a very young age, and I learned how to empathize with animals when I was taught not to pull my dog's tail and to pet her eyes. But in 1990, shortly after attending a historic 20-year anniversary Earth Day festival in Washington, D.C., where I was living at the time, a few months after that, in I believe it was June of 1990, just under 27 years ago, I happened to attend the historic March for Animals on the Mall in Washington, D.C., and I believe there were approximately 50,000 people at this event. That is where I learned to extend compassion to all animals, that a dog is a cat, is a pig, is a chicken, is a cow. And I have evolved over the years, as we all have. Very few of us are born vegan. We learn that a pig is equally as sentient and experiences fear and pain and wants to be free and love the same way as any other animal. And I have learned not to judge animals based on how they look or whether or not they can be domesticated, but rather based on their inherent given right to live their lives freely as we would wish to live our own.
And over the years, how did you earn your living, so to speak?
I have worked primarily in the nonprofit sector, working in various capacities, but I keep my professional life separate from my private life. However, I can divulge that I have recently accepted a position with an animal advocacy organization as the executive director. I can speak about that if you'd like to hear more.
I would really love you to talk about that. But just before we do, I've been onto your website and I note that you recently put up a post about an historic announcement from Tyson Foods, and this is to do with lab meat. Can you just talk a little bit about plant-based meat?
Tyson Foods has been cited for multiple violations of the Clean Water Act, Clean Air Act, in polluting water, and has been accused of mistreating their employees, and obviously has been caught in multiple undercover investigations, abusing animals, and is part of a collusion suit, and doesn't have a reputation as the best company to work for. And it was a remarkable set of news to find out that Tyson Foods made, after their stock saw a precipitous drop following a decline in sales, they made an investment in a plant-based meat company called Beyond Meat. And that is a real significant event in that I think 5, 10, 20 years ago, something like that would be unheard of simply because of the demand for animal-based meat. And so while that news may not be well received by some to have Tyson Foods owning a percentage of Beyond Meat, I would argue, and I think a salient case could be made, that exposing Beyond Meat to the environmental sustainability of plant-based meat, the more humane approach that plant-based meat involves, and the fact that it's healthier, that it's a good thing. It may inspire Tyson Foods to create their own plant-based chicken, and given their name recognition, the same way that Ben & Jerry's ice cream, one of the most popular ice creams in the United States, recently came out with five different vegan ice creams, there's something to be said for name recognition. It's a positive step.
On to your new job. I know a little bit about it, but I'll just let you go ahead now and talk about 600 million dogs.
Yes, absolutely. The organization is founded by Alex Pacheco, a former crew member of the year on Sea Shepherd. He sailed the anti-whaling ships with Paul Watson in the late 70s, who then went on to start a little-known organization called People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA. Mm-hmm. He was the co-founder of PETA and later founded PetFinder, an organization responsible for homing millions of cats and dogs, and is an inductee in the Animal Rights Hall of Fame. So Alex only thinks big, and he came up with this idea after traveling and seeing all of the stray dogs that occupy streets throughout the world, that this is a problem that we can solve. There's an estimated 600 million stray dogs in countries like Mexico, China, India, and the United States, many others. And these dogs are not dogs that wind up going to a vet to get spayed or neutered. These are dogs who languish in the streets in extreme temperatures, hot and cold. They suffer from injuries and diseases, starvation, dehydration. It is a miserable existence. And so Alex came up with an idea to develop a formula in the form of a cookie that can be fed to them one time and will sterilize them. We are in the research and development phase of that formula. We're about a third of the way through our clinical trials. We have a team of dedicated scientists in the form of organic chemists and veterinary pathologists working on, quote-unquote, a cure to this crisis overpopulation, and that is exciting. In addition, the organization is expanding in the next month or two to include advocacy for farmed animals, given that that is also an issue where billions of animals are affected every year, confined, transported, abused, eventually slaughtered. So the name of the organization is 600 Million Stray Dogs Need You, although we are in the process of changing the name given our expansion plans, but our mission will remain the same.
I read about the one-dose sterilization cookie and could not for the life of me figure out how it could possibly work with just...
Yes, well, believe it or not, there exists a formula that can sterilize animals in a 10-dose formula without surgery. So it is something that our scientists are working on, and of course, like any research and development, the timetable is unknown, but people who say they don't believe it can be done, I say we spend billions in tax dollars on finding cures to cancer, Alzheimer's, and many other diseases, and we're already seeing tremendous progress in our clinical trials. So we have every bit of confidence that we believe that this can and will be done, and, so we'll continue to work toward achieving that goal.
I've also spent a little bit of time in India, and you can't fail to notice in just about any city or small town that I went to, stray dogs absolutely everywhere. My last trip to India took me to Goa, and I was in a little beach resort, and there were, must have been 30, 40 dogs that sort of hung around the small shops and so on. But it was so hot and there wasn't even any water out for them. And the shopkeepers didn't even seem to think, well, you know, that if they put a bowl of water, that might help the dogs. And so I made up little posters and gave them to the shopkeepers and said, you know, can you just make sure there's enough water out for the dogs? It's literally heartbreaking. But there was a good side to it in India, in Goa and other places. Increasingly now there's a catch, neuter and return program that is going some way to sterilize dogs and not to bring more dogs into the world to suffer. But what you are working on would just be absolutely amazing.
Yeah, the problem is that there are so many of them that it's just simply unrealistic to think that in these countries where, for example, in China, I'm sure you've heard of the Yulin Dog Festival, where they're beaten and eaten and tortured, where we're ever going to be able to round up hundreds of millions of dogs and pay for their veterinary care. This is the solution to the world's stray animal overpopulation problem, and it has the potential to reduce significant suffering. So we're very dedicated to it, and I think anybody who spends 10 minutes with Alex, you know, listening to his vision, would be quickly convinced it is possible.
Do you have a timeline? Do you have any idea before you can make this available?
It's really impossible to say. I can tell you that the more funding we have, the more scientists we'll be able to hire to work on our formulas. So it's just not something that we could pinpoint, but I can say that we continue to make progress, and this is our team's highest priority, what we talk about every day in terms of advancing our research and development phase.
You have some very expert people working with you, biologists and veterinary surgeons, pathologists and so on. And then you've got your own and Alex's sort of passion and advocacy. I think it cannot fail. But as you say, everything depends on money.
Yes, the cost is tremendous, you know, and we have, you know, these are medical doctors, these are DVMs and people who are experts in their field, and we have had and continue to have people working on it all over the world. And of course, there's a lot of regulatory costs involved once this is approved. And so, you know, it's not a small undertaking, but I think if the average person came up with this idea, people would be understandably skeptical and even dismissive. Alex Pacheco, the founder of this organization, I estimate is responsible for saving the lives of hundreds of millions of animals. He founded the most feared and effective animal rights organization in human history. And I think that's, I don't know how anyone could argue that in terms of the tens of millions, if not more, people who have been affected by PETA over the past 40 years. Alex was the first guy in the laboratory revealing vivisection, and with his case at the Silver Spring monkey case led to the first criminal arrest of someone conducting experiments on animals, you know, a famous court case and national animal welfare legislation, and the formation of that organization, which has raised awareness about fur and circuses and eating animals and every other form of cruelty to animals to tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of people. So if you look at what he's done and the historic figure he is in the history of the movement, this is what you would expect him to think of, solving a global problem of this magnitude. So I have every bit of confidence in him and our team working on this cause.
I'd just like to touch on the problem of feral cats. We've got many stray and feral cats here in New Zealand, and of course they're often responsible for killing our native bird life, and eventually your formula may be available for feral cats as well. Is that right?
Absolutely. After we work on the formula for the dogs and are finished with that, we plan on developing a cookie for cats. And even Alex has talked about eventually creating one for other animals. There's an estimated 100 million stray cats in the world. We try to use conservative numbers. The New York Times came out with an article recently that put the dog estimates at 750 million stray dogs.
I've never understood why we think it's okay to bring animals into the world just to let them suffer. Because this is what happens, isn't it, in the farming industry, because with artificial insemination, we bring more and more and more animals to live, at least in the factory farming sector, lives of torture, brutalized and shortened lives, just so that we can eat them. So I think it's a very good thing not to bring sentient beings into the world if we know that they're going to suffer.
That's right. And I write a lot about this on my website, Kirshner's Corner. And I also have an initiative called $5 Fridays, where I select farm sanctuaries that I raise money for. It goes directly to them to support the rescue of many of these animals, because you're exactly right. These animals should never be born. Many people believe that these animals are caught in the wild, that these animals that people are eating are bred for the sole purpose of being eaten And if they're never born, they never miss anything because they never know life. We don't want ever want animals born either to suffer as strays or to suffer in confinement in factory farms or anywhere in the animal agriculture industry, because it's a life of pure misery from birth to death, and there is no such thing as humane farming. To that I say to people, in what year of your life can I end your life or deprive you of doing what comes naturally to you to eat you?
I'd just like to throw a little bit of a curveball, because we're talking about animals that are born and there's kind of no future for them, and many shelters across the world kill, oh, it must be millions and millions of dogs and cats, especially dogs, I think, per year, because they can't house them or they can't home them. But the no-kill shelter movement seems to be growing in America and even in here in New Zealand, where they don't routinely kill animals that are still healthy, that they somehow they adopt them out or foster them out or somehow keep them until they're able to find a home. Do you know much about the no-kill shelter movement?
Yes, there's arguments for and against the no-kill movement. The arguments that are most commonly shared against it is that in many cases the shelters are not ideal and the animals are suffering in cages for years where they don't get the attention that they should and don't have a quality life. They also make arguments that an animal can take up a cage for 3 years, and in that time they could turn over several animals into homes in that time, and that when a shelter is full, because they're no kill, that animals wind up getting placed in other shelters that are kill. So there are arguments for and against kill and no kill. Some of them have merit and others don't. But this is a very emotional issue for people. And so I encourage people to do their own due diligence and decide on their own where they stand on it, but it's not always as black and white as it may seem.
You have, in your animal rights career, done a great deal, more than most, to help animals and indirectly the planet, because that's another whole subject, isn't it? How veganism, for example, might be a way that not only can we save the lives of animals, but we can also help our own health and, of course, help a planet that is not doing well at all. Our listeners might be interested to hear what you suggest to them, what they can do. We're always saying that the best way is to go vegan and to little by little adopt more vegetables and less meat in our diet until the transition is made. What is your suggestion?
I'm an ethical vegan. I'm also a vegan for health and environmental reasons. First, on the environment, I strongly recommend the documentary Cowspiracy. It's eating a plant-based food is the number one way to reduce your carbon footprint, the nitrous oxide and methane gas from primarily cattle emissions, but also the air and water pollution from environmental waste, from feces waste and other waste from the factory farming industry, is a major contributor to climate change and environmental destruction. So very, very pro-environment to eat plant-based food. Of course, then from a health perspective, you're missing all of the saturated fat, cholesterol, steroids, and everything else that's injected into animals, and you're still getting plenty of protein, eating your beans, nuts, fruits, veggies, and grains. And then obviously from an ethical standard, it's obviously inhumane to support the confinement, transport, abuse, and killing needless killing of animals. My blood tests are immaculate. Don't eat any animals or animal byproducts. So to get involved, I would encourage people to go online and find animal rights organizations that interest them, farm sanctuaries, animal advocacy groups, and sign up for their action alerts and visit our website, 600milliondogs.org, and sign up to volunteer, intern, sign up for our action alerts, and you can do that for any organization, local or national or international. There are so many different opportunities to do something that you enjoy, whether it's leafleting or hosting a fundraiser or sharing videos online. So I would encourage everyone to do that and make sure that you marry your actions with your feelings about how difficult it is to think about the suffering that these animals endure.
That's great advice, Andrew. Thank you so much. And thank you for your time today. I really appreciate it. and we'll be watching, and hopefully you'll get all the funding that you need, and the formula is made available to help out the stray dogs and cats.
We appreciate your support and all you do for the cause, and thank you so much for having me on your terrific show.
Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye. I hope you enjoyed our interview with Andrew Kirshner. Andrew has his own website. It's a very good website, full of interesting articles. Go to kirshnerscorner.com, KirshnerScorner.com. And you can also check out 600milliondogs.org. I've just signed up for their action alerts, as Andrew suggested we do. Now, in New Zealand, we don't have a problem largely with homeless, nameless, starving, flea-ridden, mange-ridden dogs. But in the wider world, there are tens of millions of them. And these dogs lead lives of sheer misery. I've seen it up close in India, and couldn't help noticing that these stray animals, many of them who had never known love or affection, just quite the opposite, still have the biggest hearts. When they see you, their tail wags, they look up at you with big, soulful eyes, and they're very grateful if you feed them. I love all animals, but it's hard to deny that dogs have a special place in many of our hearts, and it's really very distressing to see the misery that so many of them live in astronomical numbers around the world. The Sterilization Cookie is a project that really does deserve to be financially backed, and I hope generous donations become available in order for Alex Pacheco and Andrew and others working on the project to enable them to complete their work. We'll go out on a track that I loved when I was a girl, so it's a really old track, but it's a goodie. I remember I'd always cry every single time I heard it, and in fact, I still do. And I dedicate this track to two wonderful dogs who passed in 2016. One was Emma Lee, beloved angel of my dear friend Jane Kay, and the other was my own angel, Bella Kyle. I'd like to dedicate it to another dog, and that dog's name is Grizz. Grizz was shot dead at Auckland Airport last week, and I want to know why on earth it had to come to that. Why wasn't Grizz tranquilized? Why didn't they use a tranquilizer dart? So let's now listen to Old Shep by Elvis. Thanks, everyone. See you next week.
When I was a lad, an old ship was a pub. Over hills and meadows we'd stray. Just a boy and his dog. Hands that gun and aimed it at Shep's faithful head. I just couldn't do it. I wanted to run. I wish they would shoot me instead. He came to my side and he looked up at me and laid his old head on my knee. I had struck the best friend that a man had. I cried so I scarcely could see. Old Shelby has gone where the good dog is gone, and no more with old Shelby will I roam. But if dogs have a heaven, there's one thing I know. Oh, Shepherd.